I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, in advance of the big performance racing industry trade show here in Indianapolis, we're going to talk about Indiana's motorsports industry. We're going to talk about just how big the industry is to the state and what's hot in the sport. My guests will be Tom Weisenbach of the Indiana Motorsports Association, race team owner and former driver Sarah Fisher, and John Kilroy, producer of the PRI trade show. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or finding us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We've got a fun one today. We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry in advance of the big performance racing industry trade show coming up. And I've got a great group of guests, but first I'd like to invite you to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'd like to welcome to the program Sarah Fisher, who is a race team owner and, of course, a former driver. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to hear the WGU is presenting because that's my school now. So
it is? Okay.
I directly relate already.
All right. So you're feeling a sense of connection.
That
is great. And Tom Weisenbach, who is with the Indiana Motorsports Association. Tom, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about the industry.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. And John Kilroy, who is the producer of the Performance Racing Industry Trade Show. I think we're going to go PRI from here on out. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's great to be back in Indianapolis.
Well, and since you are the news hook for our program here, John, tell us a little bit about what the PRI trade show is.
Well, a lot of people outside of racing think that the whole industry is the 45 cars in NASCAR race or the 33 cars in Indy 500. But there's actually over 1,000 racetracks in the United States, just tons of short tracks, tons of drag strips around the United States. And there's just a great heritage and history of people going racing in the United States at a grassroots level. And they still do it. It's just kind of a hobby, just kind of a sport, and they do it locally. So there's hundreds of thousands of people who compete in an automotive race every year. And there's a whole industry built up to supply them with all the different parts they need to go fast and go fast safely. So we'll have probably 45,000 people all in one place, motorsports professionals here at the PRI trade show, 1,200 companies showing the latest in speed parts and about 40,000 in attendance as buyers.
So who all comes to this? Is it who are the folks who come in attendance? You say 45,000 people. That's in the Midwest, that's a good-sized city.
The show is the largest racing trade show in the world. So we bring people from around the United States and 70 countries. So it's a big deal in racing, and the people who come are the manufacturers of the speed parts, the specialized racing parts, and we use the word hardcore to describe what we do, so hardcore racing. And the people who attend, they own speed shops, they build race engines for a living, build race cars for a living. Usually all the top professional race teams send representatives to the show just to see if there's one little secret speed advantage they can pick up. And then we'll have a lot of the local and regional grassroots race teams come as well.
Sarah, you were chuckling when he was talking about that one little secret edge or advantage. What prompted the chuckle?
I've been to the PRI show, for lack of better words, for, I don't even know, maybe 20 years, it seems like. You know, ever since I was that grassroots racer that was hardcore that he was talking about, you know, from, you know, racing a World Outlaw car and, you know, finding out, you know, some new little trade secrets and, you know, some of the components that you can put in your cars to perform better, to have better efficiency. So, you know, from you know, like the IndyCar level all the way down to, you know, some of the grassroots racing, there's a lot to learn. And, you know, it's a nice show that's allowing so many people to come in and communicate in, you know, our non-traveling season, quote.
Is it the sort of event, though, that is open to people who just have an interest in racing and aren't professionally involved?
That's a very good question. Thank you for raising that. It's closed to the public. So you have to prove that you're inside racing as part of a professional team, or you have a racing business. Either you own the business or you work in a speed shop or something like that. So it's closed to the public.
So, Sarah, how did you get – you said you've been going to these things for 20 years. Was it difficult sort of getting credentialed to go to the first ones, or is that –
Not as hard as you think. When you're in the industry, you know, as a competitor, you know, traveling around circuits like the World of Outlaws or the All Stars, it's, you know, you're a part of that industry already. So, you know, sometimes a lot of organizations want you to come and be a part of their booth to, you know, draw customers in. And you know, I've been doing that for quite a long time, even when I was a little kid racing those cars.
Tom, how important is this event? It's a sort of a lead into how important is the motorsports industry to Indiana?
Well, I think anytime you can bring an international trade show for the racing industry to our city and our state, it's great for everyone involved. And that's, if you look, John, I don't know what you think, what's the economic impact that Leonard and the folks in Visit India are projecting for this weekend?
That figure I heard the other day was 45 million, like 45.7.
So again, I mean that's
closer to 46 million.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I mean that alone makes it very important for our community, in our state. It also helps us reemphasize we're the motorsports capital of the world. But for that racing industry, for us in Indiana to bring 45,000 people from all over the world, truly all over the world, to our community and show off our community and what we can do. It's very important. And I also think that an important part of the PRI show for the race team owners like Sarah, the buyers from all the different companies that are out there that come to purchase their products is in our industry, John, you know, the technology could change every week. Mm-hmm. You know, you can design a part this week for your race car, go out and run it this weekend, tweak that part in your design and literally remanufacture a new one next week. And so, you know, the components are constantly changing. The technology is constantly changing. So it, I think, allows the industry to show off kind of what they constantly are working on.
What are, you know, sort of the challenges facing the industry right now? I'll stay with you on that one, Tom.
Well, I think not to speak on behalf of Sarah, but for all race teams, right now it's a couple different areas. You got to look at sponsorships, one of the probably most challenging times of still trying to find those very needed sponsorship dollars from corporate America. And then the other part of that is for your racetrack owners and operators, and that's figuring out how to sell tickets. For years, I think a lot of tracks could just open their gates. NASCAR was so powerful that the fans would just show up. And now it's a lot harder financially for fans to do that maybe more than one or twice a year. And you're seeing racetracks now all over the world start actually taking seats down and decreasing their seating capacity. And I think a lot of that, though, also falls back on that owner-operator of not being a great promoter. How do you sell tickets? And I think you got to look at, you know, a lot of stick and ball sports and the promotions they do to try to figure out how can we sell more tickets.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Sarah, Tom's making the point here that the industry overall is facing some struggles, having to take some seats down and all of that, and getting people inside the turnstiles. Is that a problem that perhaps the industry, you know, we finally got into a saturation point, or is there some other force behind it? I mean, has the industry priced itself out? I know. You know, for you, obviously, at one point when you were racing Indy, it was a struggle just to ante up, as it were, to get into the field.
Personally, I think there's just a lot more options today for either entertainment or, you know, for, I mean, even some of the technical advances out there, iPads, iPhones, all the different little gadgets that people can invest their time and money and energy into, you know, and different entertainment options that they can involve their family in, that it's, you know, it's an ongoing challenge for us to prove that we're the best option for them to invest in, you know, both financially and from a time standpoint. So, you know, I think there's a lot of entertainment industries that are facing that challenge, and it's just a matter of how we prove that we deserve to have all those fans.
John, when you come to Indianapolis, Tom's made the assertion that we are the motorsports capital of the world. Is that, you know, is it a special occasion when the PRI trade show comes here? Because obviously the 500 is the most famous race probably in the world. Does that make it a special event?
You know, there's a culture here in Indianapolis so that when races arrive, everybody in town speaks racing. And so it's really valuable for us to have that culture here waiting. We have a business event that we're putting on inside the convention center, but when people leave the convention center, they go out into the downtown and the restaurants and the bars. They're talking to people who know what they do. They're talking to other race fans. So they just really feel welcome here in Indianapolis.
Tom, how do we, you know, with these problems that we're talking about, challenges as they were, what are the best ways to meet them? And, you know, it sounds like part of the issue is that there are, as Sarah's pointed out, many more entertainment options out there. There are also just many more racing options out there, too. The sport's gotten a lot more diversified in recent years.
No, absolutely. And I think it really falls back on the sanctioning bodies, the teams, and the track owner operators to make it truly a good entertainment event. And at the end of the day, if you've got $200 to spend as a family for the month on entertainment of some kind in your family budget, do you go to Bloomington Speedway for a Friday night USAC sprint car race, or do you go to maybe Carb Day for the Indy 500, or do you go to one concert? I mean, it's really, I think, up to our industry, again, to continue to find ways to show value to the fans. And obviously, as you have more fans and more viewers on TV, that helps on the sponsorship front. It's kind of, they go hand in hand. I think another important thing for our industry to do is run your businesses smarter. At the end of the day, Sarah, as a team owner, has had to make some decisions on what do we really need and what would we really like to have. And, you know, if sponsorship allows it, you go for that big list. If the funds aren't there, then you stay with what you truly need and you live within your means.
And I'd like to just kind of say something to anybody who's listening out there who hasn't ever been to a local short track race. You got to go. There's no more thrilling way to spend your money. It costs about the amount of money you're going to spend on a movie ticket. And when you take in the noise and the speed, and when you get to learn a little bit about the drivers and you find your favorite Saturday night hero, it only takes a couple trips to short track and you buy into it big time. And you can't find another form of entertainment that comes anywhere close to racing. So we may talk here about this or that and challenges in racing, but the number one thing I want to say out there, out in radio land, is that it's just so much fun and it's just a great bunch of people. Racers are just extraordinary people. They're the kind of people that they just don't find things to get in their way. They go over, under, around to go try to win a race. And they're spectacular. And then the people in the grandstands are just a ton of fun as well. So I think it's a great American sport. I think the pendulum swings different ways. But anybody who's never been to a race, if you're stuck in your iPad all day long, get out of the office, get out of the cubicle, go to a racetrack.
How did you get interested in it, John? I mean, you're speaking about it with real passion here.
The passion came from being in the industry. So I kind of came up the ranks as a journalist and became editor of the magazine. I was always a race fan. Used to watch racing was available on Wide World of Sports and stuff, and Richard Petty. My dad wasn't the kind of guy to take me to a racetrack, so he wasn't that involved. So I got to know racing from the point of view of joining the industry, and it's been, I use the word blessing very rarely, but this has been a blessing in my life to have spent the last 20 years be able to talk with racers every day.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Sarah, how did you develop the kind of passion you've got for it? I mean, I ask you the same question I asked John.
Well, it started really early for me. I came from a racing family, even though they weren't, you know, in the professional side of it. They were that grassroots family who just thoroughly enjoyed the sport. And it's funny because my mom's dad, he was the trash man in Richwood, Ohio, and was into the paving business. And so, you know, little by little, some leftovers, he built a little go-kart track in Richwood, Ohio. And my parents met racing, and now here I am.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. My guests are Tom Weisenbach, Sarah Fisher, and John Kilroy. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's motorsports industry in advance of the big PRI show in just a few days. My guests are Tom Weisenbach, who is with the Indiana Motorsports Association, Sarah Fisher, race team owner, and, of course, former driver. I think everyone knows her. John Kilroy, who is the producer of the Performance Racing Industry Trade Show. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First off, I want to say, Sarah, growing up, you were always one of my favorite drivers. I was just wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about, one, the role of ticket prices. They seem to be, you know, far more expensive than is feasible, at least at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And then also, too, I grew up at the track. My mother grew up at the track. My grandfather grew up at the track. So I'm like third generation race head. And for me, the reason I like to go and the reason I would love to go if I could afford the ticket isn't just to see, you know, the entertainment value of the race itself. It's the environment. It's the people, the crowd, the sort of bubbling enthusiasm that exists. And never once in my life have I seen an advertisement that focuses on that aspect of the value. And so I'm wondering if your guests could talk a little bit about both ticket prices and sort of potential ad campaigns that might be successful.
Great, great questions. Thank you very much for the call, Ben.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, Tom, how about if you take the ticket price question?
Well, I think overall, probably 5 years ago, all the tracks realized they had to start doing something to get fans out the tracks because they're all seeing declines in ticket sales. And whether it's a short weekly track or like a Kokomo or a Bloomington Gas City, or whether it's the Indianapolis Motor Speedway or Lucas Oil Raceway, they all started trying to figure out what else they could do. And I think that overall, the ticket prices were getting out of hand. I mean, especially for a lot of the NASCAR races, you're talking $100 and up for a ticket. But if you look at what the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has done the last couple of years, they've done family packaging tickets. You know, kids 12 and under get in free with a paid adult. They're sensitive to that. I think the Motor Speedway and
yeah, we've had Doug Bowles on the program before, and he's been very aggressive.
Yeah,
made
it
quite clear. Yeah,
and I think you'll see for
the
Grand Prix of Indy, the new road course race that'll take place on, I believe, May 10th. I think you're going to see even lower ticket prices on that. I mean, when they had the press conference, they talked about that. You're probably looking at ticket prices in $25 range to get in for an incredible IndyCar event on a road course, inaugural event. But I think, again, even your short track races, more and more of them are 12 and under, get in free. But if you look at the big events, they're doing more. Again, I take it back from stick and ball. They're seeing how they do family four packs and everything else to try to find ways to make it affordable for the families to come back out.
And I think that, you know, when you have an event like the Grand Prix that's going to happen there on opening weekend in May, you know, it becomes a festival. It becomes an experience. You know, it's not just the race that we're talking about. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that, you know, as you sell our sport, there's a lot of different parts of it to talk about that we've all talked about repeatedly. But I think at the end of the day, really, it's about our athletes and, you know, having a lot of equity in who it is that's, you know, performing and, you know, out there and, you know, running the 200 miles an hour. And I think it's difficult to sell each and every single individual for your 2-minute story. Mm-hmm. but I think there certainly is a cast of really great athletes that we continuously need to improve, you know, telling their own unique stories.
And I think, John, an add-on to that, it's so hard in a 30-second radio or TV spot to talk about, come join the atmosphere in Epes Motor Speedway where you're going to see this, 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 and this, and to talk about the drivers, because I think we need to promote our drivers as our all-stars. It's so hard in a 30- or 60-second TV or radio spot to do that. I would say there's one organization that does it very well. It's NHRA, the National Hot Rod Association, where every ticket's a pit pass. That mm-hmm. access that the fans get is second to none, and it's the only sanctioning body that I know of that does that for every one of their national events.
How much of the – and I want to take up the second part of Ben's question too, which is the whole culture, you know, the atmosphere. That's what clearly drew him as much as the spectacle of seeing the race itself. And I remember in a previous life I was a newspaper writer and reporter, and I remember in the big – Indy US 500 split being sent up to Michigan and talking to a lot of people who were involved in both sides of that. And what struck me at the time was, okay, this is not a business dispute. This is a really nasty family quarrel. You know, that people take this stuff
personal.
Very, very personally. Mm-hmm. And race fans are incredibly passionate about the sport. I mean, I can hear it in your voices. All three of you are. You know, is there a way that I'll throw this one to John. How do you honor that in terms of promoting the industry? How do you speak to that spirit? Because it's different than just a marketing campaign.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Marketing can kill things as well as build things. And I think racing for a long time really wanted to be mainstream. And the goal of NASCAR was to be mainstream. And so they tell the guys, no more fighting in the pits, and cut that out. And they got them trained to be media savvy.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, you belong in Congress.
And how to answer the question and with all your sponsors. And I don't think marketing is the answer, actually. I think people in racing who love racing ought to just be racers. And I think instead of trying to be mainstream, I think we ought to just say, you know, I'll be honest with you, baseball is boring. I think golf is boring. I think Facebook is boring. And there's going to be 45,000 people in this convention center.
I was going to say, you managed to offend about 200 million people.
They can all call in. But there's going to be 45,000 people in this convention center who agree with me. So mm-hmm. I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a country and Western kind of feel to racing. And if that's kind of what you like, your kind of culture, that's racing culture. They're just friendly, open people, a lot of country people involved in racing. And that's the spirit that they want to have there. And I helped for a fundraiser. I helped my daughter with a parking lot tram at Fontana Speedway mm-hmm. for a big NASCAR event. So I wasn't John PRI. I was just the guy on the parking tram. And the NASCAR fans, they get out of their cars, they sit down, they start talking to each other, and they start having fun. And they're all like a bunch of cousins going to a race. And if you like that kind of environment, which I'm guessing everybody does, that's at a racetrack. And just for fun, I got on the microphone and I said, hello, welcome to Fontana Speedway. My name's John, and I'm the owner of Fontana Speedway, just for fun. The whole tram said, hi, John. And that's the kind of fun you can have at a racetrack.
So Mr. France is calling in now, by the way.
Call in.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can find us on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to talk a little bit, Tom. I mean, part of it is it's an international sport, and a large part of your challenge, your responsibility isn't to the entire racing industry. It is to Indiana's piece of it. How do you go about positioning Indiana so that we remain as competitive as we can in what sounds like is an increasingly competitive industry?
I think the tagline for the IMA should be "Wonder in Indiana," like Governor Daniels used to always say. I spend most of my Monday through Thursday on the road driving across the state, trying to meet with as many different motorsports industry companies that we can, big, small, suppliers, manufacturers, race teams, racetracks. So it's pretty incredible who we find out there. And I think we were part of a study with Purdue University and IU about a year ago that we actually released the details at the PRI show or the IMA show last year, which is now merged with PRI. But it was incredible what we found out, that there's motorsports entities in all 92 counties of Indiana. So we truly are a statewide initiative. So 92 out of 92 counties have at least one motorsports company in it. We found that there's over 23,000 jobs directly involved in the motorsports industry. The average salary is $62,000. So we learned more about our industry in this study than we ever had before. But we also found that a lot of our manufacturers and supply and design firms in the motorsports industry have diversified, John. They've to fill that gap of when business is slow, where else can I go? And what they've figured out is the technology transfer from motorsports over to the automotive industry or the defense industry, it's there. And so we've really helped and pushed and tried to introduce a lot of our racing industry people to folks from the defense world. We've gotten Raytheon directly involved with IndyCar and Dallara on some Raytheon technology. They're bringing defense and aerospace technology into IndyCar. So, again, it's a challenge, but it's that's the fun part of the job is every day trying to figure out ways to help grow our industry.
We're talking about the motorsports industry here in Indiana. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Patrick. If you would like to follow Patrick's example and connect with us by email, you can do so by sending the email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Says he's got two questions, one for the panel. We'll start with that one. Says, how much of a detriment is it to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway specifically and the United States in general that international racing series aren't inclined to hold events here? F1 only recently came back to the United States after IRL management dropped the ball on their contract. MotoGP makes two stops in the U.S., Mazda Raceway, Laguna Seca, and Indianapolis, and Aussie V8s made their way to Austin as well. But beyond that, larger series are absent. There's no World Rally Championship event, no FIA GT, no World Touring. I think we're getting the example. Is this an institutional problem, a monetary problem, or an American culture problem, and what can be done to change them? Who would like that one first? John, how about if we throw that one to you?
It's a very good question, and it's something that people can talk about for a long period of time within the racing industry. So nobody knows exactly the right answer. In the United States, this is a big place, and when you travel in Europe and you talk to people in the racing business in Europe, the one thing you're impressed with is this United States, with the population, with the industry, and the money that we have here, it's massive. And it almost represents half the world when you start kind of adding up how people spend money. So for us to have the kind of racing here that we like, for people in California to have their kind of racing versus people in Florida or the Midwest, it's okay. So it's okay that we don't have international events come to the United States. So that's kind of speaking from a general point of view of the industry. We're fine the way we are. However, I would like to say there's spectacular racing in Formula One. The technology is just like developed by NASA. And so if you're a gearhead, you drift towards Formula One. Like, how's that engine work again? Explain to me how many revolutions per minute. That's impossible. There's great racing in DTM racing, which might come to the United States. And the World Rally, that'd be great to have it come to the United States. I don't think it's a detriment to any of us here that it doesn't, except when you love racing and you love some of the technology that's in those cars, you want to see it. You want it to come to your town.
Anyone else have thoughts on this?
Well, I think your emailer listener is a very compassionate race fan. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, some of our struggle, just looking from, you know, where we stand and, you know, what we sell and communicate to, you know, corporate America is simplifying the racing industry so that it's easy for a mom who has two kids to follow in her extra 20 minutes a day, mm-hmm. you know, and when you have such compassionate
Sounds
race
like you're
fans,
speaking from experience.
Yeah,
here,
let me tell you, 20 minutes max. any case, you know, it's you have to make it very simple to follow. And sometimes when you bring in so many different series and so many different parts of racing, it starts to become cloudy. So when you look at sort of where we are from a speedway standpoint, it's like, okay, what can our fans follow, you know, to an extent that it doesn't cloud what we're trying to achieve?
How much of this, though, I mean, Patrick makes a reference to an American cultural, he says problem. I'd go with challenge or issue, and I'm not putting it into, you know, a kind of xenophobia or anything like that. Some of it also might be the nature of the race world, too. I mean, I've had, you know, people argue about whether, you know, open wheel racing as opposed to NASCAR is better or worse, and they approach it almost as if we were going to refight the Civil War on that subject. So,
yeah, it's one you can talk about again for a long time, and it's very opinionated, heated views from different people, different compassionate race fans, you know, and for myself, it's all about making it as simple as possible so that, you know, when you elect to become a racing fan from the get-go, from the start, you know, it's simple to follow, and you can engage yourself in it quite easily.
And then Patrick also had a second question that's directed specifically for Sarah. It says, are you keeping Joseph Newgarden signed as a driver in 2014?
Yes.
I thought he was mightily impressive at Barber Motorsports Park and Sao Paulo this year, and with a talent like that, I'd wager that he could attract more sponsors and help expand and build the team.
Well, that's really interesting. Joseph has a three-year commitment to our team, and you know we've had a lot of great experiences with him, and as we continue to grow, you know, we like to see him be a part of that. But one thing that frustrates me so often is, you know, all these folks saying, well, you know, this is a great proving ground for Joseph to be at SFHR until he gets on to big and better things at one of the other big and better teams. And I'm like, well, you know what? My partner, Wink Hartman, and I have invested quite a bit in this kid. And, you know, it's to grow as a team and to accomplish what we have together as a team, it is a team effort. And, you know, to just say that it's a proving ground, you know, it becomes quite irritating, I guess, because, you know, when you put a lot of time and energy into a program like that, you don't like to be looked at as just a proving ground.
How, I got a couple of questions for you. I'm going to stay with you for just a second. How hard is it to find talent like that? I mean, you know, we think of it simply as a sport, but, you put somebody behind the wheel, you're also putting them in charge of what is a massive investment as well.
Well, it's tough, not because you can't just put a driver in and see his best time.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that's just a very small piece of the pie. You know, there's lots of drivers that I could throw in Joseph's seats that could produce great times. But, you know, are they able to communicate with our engineering staff? Are they able to, you know, grow as a driver and identify areas of their own weaknesses that they can improve on? Can they help build, you know, on our engineering side? What's their feedback like? You know, how do they work in race mode? It's not just about how fast you can go. And it's finding that person. It takes time. You can't just have one test and say, oh, I got the next Michael Schumacher because he turned a lap time of this. And mm-hmm. It feels like today he's doing good on feedback. It really takes a time and an investment to sort of uncovered those diamonds in the rough.
And then the other part of that question is, how hard is it for you to step back from that? I mean, I would think having been behind the wheel yourself, I would think it'd be a little difficult not to second guess.
No, I have amazing people at the team. I could not be where I'm at without the team of engineers that we have at SFHR, without, you know, my husband, Andy O'Gara, who, you know, started with me with the team from the very beginning, and you know, our team manager Mike O'Gara, and just the whole slew of people that we have. We've particularly placed each and every one of them on purpose, and you know, it's very much a family culture that we have at our team. So it's designed around a very unique working system, and without those people, I wouldn't be able to do, you know, what I'm able to do without, you know, able to find someone like Joseph or able to find, you know, people to help on the engineering staff by, you know, based on who we have currently already. So it very much is a team experience.
How much does your experience, though, as a driver shape what you do as an owner?
It shapes it a lot, you know, because I've been in Joseph's seat before. You know, I was 2 years younger than him when he first started, when I first started. So, you know, as far as the experience level and what we both did and being able to know what he's feeling and you know, how he needs to contribute to get to that next level, and what our team needs to do to be able to support that. You know, he's in his third year, and, you know, the third year is oftentimes where your ranking really, really comes true or not. So as a team, you know, I know what a driver would want in order to support that, and, you know, hopefully we can provide that.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Tom Weisenbach, Sarah Fisher, and John Kilroy. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry in advance of the big PRI show. My guests are Tom Weisenbach, who is with the Indiana Motorsports Association, Sarah Fisher, who is a race team owner and former driver, and John Kilroy, who is the producer of the PRI trade show. Gotten an email from a listener named Matt, who was saying, I was wondering if any of the panelists are familiar with iRacing and if they think it's feasible for someone who races on that platform to become a race car driver in real life. Anyone have a thought, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yes and no. I probably wouldn't put an iRacing champion right directly into an IndyCar, but, you know, surely I think if you're passionate enough to go there for experience and, you know, to learn about motorsports, then by all means, do you need to get in a go-kart and start with that route and see, you know, where that road takes you. We have such wonderful opportunities like out at Newcastle with the Dismore family, and that's where Joseph grew up. That was his backyard, and that is why he is in racing, was because of the Dismore family. So, you know, it can start at a lower level.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Aaron that's right on that point. It says, how might we get more kids involved in racing versus the traditional kid sports, baseball, football, soccer, et cetera, akin to how young people participate in Brazil and Europe? And I guess I'd form that. If you want to get involved in racing, you have a passion for it, what's the best way to do that? How do you start in this industry?
Well, I mean, karting for me, it was how it started. I mean, back, and this is dating how old I am, but, you know, 27, 28 years ago, there weren't carts for kids, you know, that were 4 years old. So I had to go the quarter midget route, which, you know, really was kind of a little league of racing. And we wanted to get out of that pretty quick. So we went into go-karting, and there's so many little go-kart tracks, like you were saying, all across the country, that really the experience is what you make it and how much you can put into it. And, you know, karting can be extremely expensive, but at the same end, it can be affordable too. You don't have to have new tires every time you go out. You can go, you know, find a reasonably used cart to try something out and to see if it's something that you really want to put the passion and energy behind.
And John, really, yeah, we Tom, also have yeah. the can, and we'll see a lot of this at the PRI show here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but from karting to quarter midgets to junior dragsters, you know, those are probably your three, and then motocross bikes for the little kids, but those are your four probably popular ways to get youth, 6, 7, 8 year olds, involved in the motorsports industry. And again, it's going to take a commitment from mom and dad as much as the child, you know. And I hope mom and dad doesn't force that child to get into it. They got to want to do it. But if they've never experienced it, they don't know. So we hope they take them to a local karting track and let them check it out and see what it's like and see if they have a little bit of an enthusiasm or passion for it.
Is there a safety backlash a little bit? Like, you know, football obviously has taken a major hit here in recent years because of safety concerns on the part of parents. I would think that's at least a thought in a parent's mind before you put a child in a vehicle that's going to be moving at a considerable speed.
You always evaluate safety, you know, but as soon as my daughter turns 4 or 5, I forget the age limit, I'm sure to find out soon. She has all the electric cars in the garage. You know, but it'll be something that we explore, and we just make sure that she has the most up-to-date safety equipment that she can, and we'll find those types of things at places like the PRI show. You know, but I think for sure when parents go to put their kids in a cart, you know, they realize the dangers of that, but at the same time, you know, going home from the racetrack, you know, in your streetcar, you're probably more likely to get hurt in that than you would be in a go-kart on a little track in wherever, mid-America.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do as David has done and find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. David's question is, the future of auto transportation is electric. The internal combustion engine has run its course. I go to Indian Brickyard every year and have seen its sad decline since the CART URL schism. Indy could be relevant again by looking to the future of energy and transportation. There's plenty of room for solar at the track, import wind from northern Indiana wind farms, a diesel-electric hybrid one at Le Mans, an electric motorcycle one at Pikes Peak. Check out the new FIA-E series Andretti is in. Why isn't there more interest? John, I'll throw that one to you.
A lot of racing is built from the ground up. So if you kind of go back in the history and the heritage of racing, somebody who really wanted a racetrack and there wasn't one close enough could just take a tractor to his field of corn and make a dirt track. Mm-hmm. So racing's never been like somebody's been in charge of all of racing.
So it literally was, if you build it, they will come.
Literally it was, and a lot of times took place in Iowa. So racing's never had a king or a guru that could just kind of mandate stuff to happen. It happens from the ground up, and it happens because there's such a level of excitement for what's taking place that people just gravitate to it. So right now, this person is on the money with kind of what he's expressing and what's going to be the future of racing. It just hasn't been invented yet, but it won't be declared or mandated. It'll be somebody, perhaps in Iowa, create some new way to go racing, and all of a sudden everybody's got to do it. I think there's ways to go electric racing where you can get the power current actually in the pavement, mm-hmm. and the race vehicles can pick up the power right off the pavement from electricity. So there's bold new ways that high school kids can go fast. We just don't know what they are yet, but they can get started in racing, a brand new form of racing. And then what we love at the PRI Trade Show is we want to open door to innovation so that when they arrive at the track, everybody gets their own particular opportunity to figure out, how am I going to go faster? How am I going to beat that other guy? And it takes discipline. It takes smarts. It takes relentlessness and not giving up and all the attributes that Sarah is exhibiting here today as we talk. And that's going to happen, and whether it's a gas-powered motor or another kind of powered motor, the sport that we love and the reason we do it will continue.
Do you worry, though, that everybody, I think all three of you at different points during the program have mentioned the noise, the level, and that's something that an electric car will not produce. I mean, that roar of the engine, which in itself is the cliche, do you worry that you'll lose some of that?
I would say yes, and I've been to the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and when the Corvette zoomed by, everybody went crazy. They loved that sound of a V8, and when the diesel cars went by, it was like, okay, it's fast, but it's quiet. So that is a potential problem.
Most dangerous form of racing when I worked at Lucas Oil Raceway was when we had actually the University Electric Car Series there, because you couldn't hear the cars coming up behind you, right? If a sprint car comes up behind you in a short track and you're walking where they need to go, they just hit the throttle one time and you jump out of your shoes and get out of the way. When this electric car comes behind you, what are they going to do, beep a little horn, beep, beep? I mean, there was nothing. So actually, I always say it was the most dangerous type of racing we had at IRP because you couldn't hear him coming up behind you.
We are talking about Indiana's motorsports industry. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Chuck, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, being someone who's getting in the older guy category, I remember as a kid in the 50s, 60s, and even into the 70s, being very eager to see what the next year's cars were going to look like, and it seemed we were more passionate brand-wise and engine-wise, and now at Indianapolis, I love it there. It's a great place. Very exciting, but you have 33 cars and 29 of them are Hondas. They're all generically the same automobile. And when I hear that Honda won the race on a set of Goodyears, it's like, ho-hum, you know. It's one less thing to really care about anymore. And my question basically is, has that lack of automotive romance had any effect on the fan base, as opposed to now it seems more of an emphasis on the rock star personalities of various drivers. You've got the tough guy, the nice guy, the intimidator, the attractive female, or, you know, any of that. But has that lack of automotive passion in itself had an effect that needs to be overcome in the fan base? And I'm good with that.
Thanks very much for the call, Chuck. We'll see if we can get you an answer. He is, and I think to boil Chuck's question down, I mean, I remember when I was a reporter going out when we did the first Brickyard and having a guy explain that the reason he was there was because he had a Ford preference. The other thing that was interesting is he managed to make Ford a four-syllable word. But it was clear he was passionate, much more, no offense, Sarah, much more about the kind of car than about the driver. Is that still part of the culture and the industry? I'm not going to throw it. Well, Sarah, why not? You're probably the one who had the most personal feelings.
I guess, he's also a very compassionate racing fan. That comes back to our sport needing to do a better job of educating, because it really is half Chevy and half Honda. So, you know, I think nowadays when consumers are looking at brand choices, they're looking more about value and what they're getting out of brand. And we're starting to lose, you know, some of those compassionate brand consumers that are all Chevy or all Honda. I mean, God bless him. He thinks they're all Hondas, which is what our team is. So yeah, Honda's going to be real happy with me.
You're good with him. Yeah.
You know, but at the end of the day, we need to do a better job of educating and you know, showcasing some of the technology and innovation that, you know, these two brands, Honda and Chevy, are finding through our sport. And as we grow, it's really about value of our series and how we can entice and bring in more suppliers, more manufacturers. It's not because we're saying no to Ford or whomever. It's the value of our series and trying to, you know, catch 22 the situation, you know, what they can get out of it versus, you know, just having them involved. So we certainly aren't saying no to having more involvement. It's just got to make the right sense.
I think if you look at racing in general, John, right now, IndyCar worked very hard to get Chevrolet back engaged. Who, when they left, Chevrolet left IndyCar, and we have them back in there with Honda. Toyota then left, which was a disappointment. You know, where's Mercedes-Benz? Where's Ford? And it's not necessarily, you know, those manufacturers in general have cut their marketing dollars so much in what they were 10, 20 years ago, they can't spend the research and development dollars to develop a motor that can run in these series. So that makes it very challenging as well. We don't have the industry, the corporate support of the manufacturers like we used to do. Yes, it's one chassis, it's Dallara. Yes, it's one set of tires, Firestone. And I think how we can get others engaged is to get more cars out there. And to do that, we need more fans and more sponsorship.
How much of that is a – well, I'll ask it another way. How did the bailouts affect the industry? I mean, I would think auto industries, after they've managed to get – had to take a lot of money from the federal government, are thinking,
well,
you know, I can't.
Honda
be...
didn't, so that didn't affect it. GM did, but the money that General Motors kind of took it, I think, to their general fund for General Motors operating dollars, operating budget, to where all the dollars that are invested in IndyCar racing and even really over the NASCAR side is through Chevy Racing. It's a division of the Chevrolet brand, Chevrolet division. Did some of those dollars trickle down to that? I don't know. Again, I think as a race fan,
oh, I'm talking more about the perception that we're going to invest a lot in a marketing campaign at a time when taxpayers are having to dig into their wallets to.
Well, I think if you look at title sponsorship of events, Chevrolet, Ford, Firestone, a lot of these brands used to always sponsor events, and they don't do that anymore. They're spending their money more wisely, and it's on developing new vehicles for customers to buy. So I think it has affected our industry some in the sense of how they spend their dollars. That's what I see. John, I mean, John, you deal with the industry globally. I mean, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that potentially the bailouts kept a lot of people racing. And I think the way it did is that there were a lot of people who worked for different types of automotive companies. So not just General Motors, but all the suppliers to General Motors. And you go to any service department, any GM dealership, and there's racers there in the service department. So if GM would have gone under, and then all their suppliers would have struggled as well and been more layoffs than we experienced. Those would have been racers who would have fallen on harder times and potentially not have gone racing, grassroots racers.
So, Sarah, how, I mean, what kind of sponsorship levels do you have to be competitive at your, you know, I mean, you're racing at the highest level.
Everybody operates off of a different budget, and it you know, it fluctuates so big. You know, when we were a 10-race team, we had a $5 million operating budget, you know, and it's a balance of, you know, different partnerships. It doesn't all come from one place. There's just no way possible to do that in these times. So, you know, you really have to look at, you know, like T-Bock, Tom was saying earlier, you know, your mm-hmm. wish list, what you would like to have to know that X, Y, and Z will make you, you know, move the needle just that little bit more. And, you know, the ABCs over here that are the basics that'll help you move the needle, you know, a little bit further. So it's budgeting those items and knowing which ones are the most important and trying to file for those first.
How about, say, like more alcohol sponsorships? Are those something the industry should pursue, or?
The spirits industry?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, those all tried it, and I think what they've realized is most of them, Jim Beam and Canadian Club, which are the sister brands, they were in IndyCar and Champ Car back in the day, and they had some success. They also went with Jack Daniel's Crown Royal over into NASCAR. They quickly realized for their investment they could not sell enough additional product to make it work on the ROI pattern, and so obviously they all got out. So it just didn't work for them.
Got a question, email question from a listener who just wants to know what the effect of the shortened 2014 IndyCar schedule is likely to be on race teams and how it might affect fan interest and loyalty. Sarah,
well,
your thoughts.
You know, I certainly hope it does what it set out to achieve. And, you know, in not competing with some of the other entertainment values out there that our customers can, you know, take, as well as, continue to race, you know, week in, week out, and sort of maintain consistency for our viewership. I hope it achieves that because, you know, from a race team perspective, it's going to be really difficult, you know, from a small team. From a bigger team, I can see where there might be some, you know, better efficiencies for turnaround and cars from week to weekend. You know, you go to an event on a Wednesday and you get home either Monday morning or Sunday night. So you only have 2 days to turn everything around, you know, 30 person wide, and get to the next event. If it's a road course from an oval and if you crash that past weekend, and there's a lot that goes into that. So it'll be tough, but you know what? If it achieves what we want it to achieve and it increases our viewership, it increases our value and our sponsorship, then by all means, I'm game.
I think that's going to have to be the last word. Sarah Fisher, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
John Kilroy, thank you very much for being here. Enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you, John.
And Tom Weisenbach, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you as well.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits, where we've been talking about the Indiana motorsports industry in advance of the upcoming PRI show. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes, and Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.